Welcome to It's More Than That.
When you see that student crying in the hallway after an exam, it's probably not just the exam. There's definitely something else going on, and it is our job not to have those judgments because there's more to every story.
It's More Than That is a podcast by the University of Minnesota Duluth. I'm Paula Peterson. Often we don't understand the full story of someone's reality. Join me as we explore the complexities of the human experience. This week on the show, Neil Bakta. I want to welcome Neil Bakta to our podcast, our Campus Climate podcast. So thanks for being here, Neil.
Thank you for having me.
I looked at some other video that you've been highlighted in just to get a sense. I feel like I don't know you well. We've met as part of your role as president of Student Association and your leadership on campus. And I have to say that Mike Kinyanya talked about you a lot in his podcast. So I was like, I got to get that guy on here. So thanks.
Thank you.
So I know you've listened to the podcast, so you have a sense of our rhythm here, but like to start with a sense of who you are and where you come from and how you got to UMD. So if you don't mind sharing your story a little bit.
Yeah, so currently I'm a junior, double majoring in political science and communication.
Okay.
I graduated high school from Shakopee, Minnesota. But where I come from is a much longer story.
We've got time, Neil.
Awesome. So my parents immigrated to the United States about 5 years before I was born.
Okay.
They both dropped out of high school in 10th grade to come here, and they actually met here in Atlanta, Georgia.
Hmm.
They started working in Atlanta before they got married, and then they got married and moved to Arkansas. Pine Bluff, Arkansas, which is where I was born.
Okay.
And I was there up until third grade. After third grade, we moved to Minnesota, and I was out South St. Paul for a year. Then I was in Mankato for 2 years, back to South St. Paul for 1 year.
Oh, my. Okay.
And then Shakopee from seventh grade to senior year.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot of moving around, but... And then actually right the day before I moved in, freshman year of high school or college, my parents moved again, and they're in Malacca, Minnesota now.
Okay.
That's like their little getaway retirement place.
Okay.
And then, but yeah, for me, Shakopee, Minnesota does feel like home.
Okay.
That's where I spent the most time.
Shakopee. All right. And you said your parents, interestingly, both immigrated but didn't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like they met in Atlanta.
Yeah, so
where did they immigrate from? I don't know.
So my dad they're both from India.
Okay.
But my dad actually went to Trinidad and Tobago first because the immigration path was a bit easier for him to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad actually came over illegally.
Okay.
And then my mom came over from India legally.
Mm-hmm.
And then their parents actually met and they got to talking. And in our culture, it's very common for arranged marriage, so that's what happened with them, and yeah, so they eventually, their parents met first, and then they got to meet in Atlanta.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how has that been for your, like, their differing immigration paths?
Yeah, so my mom's path was a lot easier, obviously. She got to come here legally. It was just collecting the money, which was harder for her.
Sure.
And actually, that whole side of the family, her older sister was the only one to attend college
mm-hmm.
for a semester. And then she got married and moved to Panama. So it was more for my mom when she got the right to come here that she had to collect the money.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just her coming here. She had to bring her younger brother and, or actually her older brother. He's like a year older.
Mm-hmm.
And then her parents. So they had to collect money to get here. And then they left behind everyone else that was here. Then for my dad, it was the same thing. He had to bring his mom and dad, but his older brother and younger brother stayed behind.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved to, I want to say it was his dad's brother, lived in Trinidad at the time. So they went there and helped work for him for a while before they were kind of paying off debts, essentially. and then making money to come here illegally, but then obviously became legal with the marriage to my mother.
Sure, sure. And I think, yeah, I'm just struck by some of the language that we hear out there and, you know, legal, illegal, documented, undocumented,
yeah.
and some of the, yeah. So thanks for sharing that part of the story. Curious too, you know, when Susanna Playa Woodward, who was actually our first guest on the first episode, talked about her immigration story and just lifting up to the listening audience that notion that leaving home and everything familiar, that's not an easy choice for folks. And do you have a sense of what that was about for your parents to make that choice?
Yeah, I think for my parents, it was just coming here for a better life, trying to experience something new,
mm-hmm.
and then trying to bring everyone here eventually.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't been successful in that, unfortunately. Our whole family's not here yet, and it's looking like it's still going to be a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But for them, it was just starting to live a better life because education wasn't the right choice for my parents back in India.
Mm-hmm.
My dad had to drop out to support the family,
yeah.
and start working. He actually opened up his own automobile shop.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom was just living at home, helping her mom out around the house. So coming here was a land of opportunity, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You could do whatever you set your dreams to. The goal was to get an education when they got back here, but at the time, no one spoke our native language, so
mm-hmm.
it was pretty much impossible. So one day, I hope that, like, when I'm in a better situation financially, that I could at least help my parents get their GEDs, if not a college degree.
Yeah, yeah. You're living... You're the manifestation of all that they mm-hmm. they worked for and sacrificed for.
That's, yeah.
That must feel like a little pressure.
Just a little chip on the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. And yet you're really living into it powerfully. Yeah, yeah. What do you hope to do after, like, what's, or be, or?
Ooh, so, well, since I got here, I've been obviously involved with student government a lot.
Yeah.
And then just the higher education aspect of universities.
Sure, yeah.
And with my communication major, I've been thinking a lot about going into higher education, but still thinking. I'm junior, got a little bit of time, but
sure, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but yeah. That's definitely something I've been thinking about.
Yeah. Well, your involvement in student association is, you're out there. You're doing it, and clearly helping other people find their path to being involved and engaged on campus. I'd love to hear more about your mental health awareness campaign, and I know that's a big something that you've helped lead, and just think that would be useful to hear about some of what you're seeing on campus, how that impacts campus climate. And
yeah, so we started the Band Together campaign last year in Student Association, and there's these wristbands that we distribute. I'm actually wearing one right now. So they're red and gray and say Band Together on them.
Mm-hmm.
We did some research earlier last year and saw that gray signifies that you're an ally of people who identify with the mental illness.
Okay.
And red signifies that you personally identify with the mental illness.
Okay.
And we didn't want to just, like, have you wear one colored wristband to call you out, because maybe you aren't comfortable saying that you do identify with a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So we put both colors on one wristband, and it's essentially a way of, like, if I see one of my friends struggling and they're wearing one of these wristbands, I know that I should be there to talk to them, and they mm-hmm. want someone to talk to.
Sure.
So it's a way of starting conversations, because the stigma around mental health shouldn't be there, but we do have it, unfortunately. And it's just a way of starting those conversations and letting people know it is okay to have these conversations. And sometimes you don't need a solution. Sometimes you just need to talk about it.
Yeah, right.
And we're just hoping to spread more awareness around mental health on campus,
mm-hmm.
and that we do have plenty of other resources. One thing that's big about this campaign is we know we're not the experts, and we probably will never be the experts in Student Association, but
mm-hmm.
we can connect people with the resources they need.
Yeah, yeah. And it, and as you said, just breaking down that stigma of it's, I'm trying to remember the numbers. When Dr. Lisa Irwin was on the show, she brought this up as a important, I think the question to her was what keeps you up at night, and mm-hmm. and just the students and the number of students that struggle. Do you have those numbers?
I do not know them off the top of my head.
I want to say 1 in 5, 1 in 3, we'll look into it. But certainly as a former faculty, that awareness that our students certainly, all of us, come to work with more than our roles and our majors, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of who we are and what we're dealing with. And I think even this podcast is that attempt to make us all more human reveal a fullness of who we are as a campus community can help us out a lot. So how do you see that in your classmates manifesting their mental health struggles? What does it look like other than, I would imagine, falling behind in classes? But what else are you and your student association colleagues seeing in our students?
Yeah, so student-wise, there's a lot of, sometimes you just start skipping a lot of things. It's mm-hmm. not just necessarily not doing things. It's just skipping things, taking time for yourself, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's not done in a healthy way, mm-hmm. which is when we start seeing the negative effects. And then just seeing students drop out at higher rates. Personally, last year, I know 4 people who did drop out because of their mental health.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's academic-wise is where faculty will see it the most.
Mm-hmm.
But we also see it in social life and jobs as well as academics, because at the end of the day, we are here for our academics, but that's not the only things that we're doing. And then the big change we're trying to take this year is to focus it on the whole campus community, not just students.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we did a faculty staff appreciation brunch, I would say, where we had a room open and just a whole bunch of snacks, and we had someone talking about the Band Together campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And also last week we wrote a whole bunch of positive notes on pieces of paper and got Dr. Irwin to let us go around the campus and put them onto cars and the windshields. And we're hoping we hit more than just students in that, but yeah.
Sweet. Maybe we'll end up coming back to that, Neil, because I think that's a really important part of what we can talk about here that will help folks. I'm curious. I know you were on the same campus climate leadership team.
Mm-hmm.
So you're involved from your role as student association president on our broader campus climate. And just if you could say anything about your perceptions or student association or students' perceptions of campus climate and what's happening, what we need to be focusing more on.
So campus climate, I would say, is probably one of the most important things we do as a campus, especially when we compare to other institutions. How in-depth we go with our campus climate surveys and reports is so much more extensive than other places.
Mm-hmm.
And it's honestly, I wouldn't say comforting, but it's good to know that our campus does take it seriously, especially with all the wide variety of topics that are covered in campus climate. It's honestly a way of holding people accountable,
mm-hmm.
and knowing that the university is going to do that. But it's not, we're not shaming the students, because we have the student code of conduct, which helps students learn from their mistakes and make improvements.
So do you see, when you see campus climate issues, concerns, do you see it more as that, well-intentioned mistakes, or is there more knowledgeable, knowing intended harm, or what's the balance of what you see?
I think it definitely varies by individual.
Yeah.
we're obviously never going to know, just looking at the numbers, who was doing it on accident, who did it intentionally.
Sure.
But like I said, having the student code of conduct being there to teach you from your mistakes,
mm-hmm.
I think it will hopefully, we'll start seeing a trend in numbers down, hopefully.
Yeah.
But with that being said, we get a new population every year with first year students coming in, and them having to go through that initial adjustment of being a college student. So it's a great process that we have, and it's a great way of learning to not just become a better student, but become a better individual,
mm-hmm.
and just be a better citizen in the community you represent.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that idea of onboarding new students, like we do new staff and faculty, to here's who we are, here's goal two, and what we say, the kind of climate that we value and have here on campus or are working to have. And I think our approach sounds similar to yours, which is that, you know, we don't expect you to have all of that or know all of that, but there's resources to help us all grow and develop so that our blind spots and biases can be, so that we can grow through them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think especially since UMD as an institution prides itself on community, mm-hmm. and creating a community,
mm-hmm.
having something like this that helps people be responsible for their actions and hopefully become more inclusive is a great way of trying to develop that sense of community.
Mm-hmm. What do you see most as, like you mentioned, incidents going down? What, if you can share, like what's the nature of those incidences?
Yeah, so a lot of it is students that come here. We have such a wide variety of students coming from the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone is knowledgeable about diversity and inclusion and things like that. So sometimes things do go south because you aren't educated, because that's not the community or background you come from.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of those incidents hopefully are just miseducation and aren't intentional.
Right.
But that being said, I also can't speak for everyone, but I do want to believe that I personally believe there's good in everyone, and sometimes you do slip up and make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the community you grow up in is a big factor of building and shaping who you are. So a lot of it goes onto that as well.
So is it more like comments made racist, sexist, homophobic, that is that kind of the nature of what,
yeah,
what
so
category that would fall in?
I was more thinking.
Yeah, okay. All right. So, yeah. All right. Yeah. That certainly fits some of our campus climate results then, mm-hmm. also. So kind of full circle, Neil, if you don't mind, you talked about depending on the community that someone grows up in, and you mentioned, you know, your family and your story and the moving around more in the Midwest. And how was that for them and for you? And how does it kind of bring you to where you are today with your own awareness?
Yeah. So for me, I grew up in a lot of different communities.
Yeah.
During the time, I hated my parents for it. Like, I just wanted to stay in one spot.
Yeah.
Because going through the whole process of making new friends, being the new kid,
mm-hmm.
it was tiring. And honestly, it took a toll. But looking back now, it was all for the better, because we were really poor growing up. So my parents always took the better job opportunity where they could make more money and help me and my sister,
mm-hmm.
Younger sister. I don't know if I mentioned that before.
No.
But so I grew up in a lot of different communities, and I learned a lot. In Arkansas, we were in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. It was very self-segregated. There was the white part of town, and then there was the minority part of town. And we grew up kind of like right in the middle, and we experienced both parts. So it was really interesting to see how people interacted with each other and just the different composure of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next stop was South St. Paul. And while we were going to South St. Paul, we actually lived in St. Paul. So the school community was a lot different than the community we were living in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just gaining a, I've been blessed with all this moving that I've gained perspective on so many different aspects of people's lives.
Sure.
And how people think about things, because like I talked about earlier, we moved around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah, so you've experienced different, more South St. Paul being a more diverse school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Probably compared to Shakopee.
Yeah.
So you were able to experience kind of different combinations of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you, if you don't mind me asking, did you or your family experience, you know, racism, bias in your communities that you're, that inform you?
I mean, yeah, I think it was inevitable,
sure.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Especially in the, when we went to school, the lines had us closer to the predominantly white school in Arkansas. So we went to the predominantly white school, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, it was honestly inevitable there. Being the only two other Indian kids were my cousins.
Yeah, okay.
So the three of us, two of us were in the same grade, one was a bit older. It was just the things you hear, the way people treat you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, sometimes, like we were talking about earlier, it wasn't intentional. It was just the way people grew up. They just didn't have that around them. But sometimes it was intentional, like things on the playground being called red because people didn't know what kind of Indian we were.
Mm, okay.
Confusing the Native American Indian aspect.
Sure.
And then the biggest example I could think of for my family is after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
my uncle from my mom's side worked at a gas station, and someone came in there. I don't know if they were paying for gas or what, but he was working the cash register, only one on, late night shift, and the person just absolutely beat him up.
Wow.
And he ended up being fine. He didn't have to go to the hospital or anything, but that was just like a shock. Like a lot of it for us did happen after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just,
yeah. So not only mistaking you and your ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
But clearly having hate and bias,
yeah,
toward who they were mistaking you for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not an uncommon story during that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then for us, we're in the hotel industry. So my parents and my uncle and aunt actually worked their way up. So they all started as maids in hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got to Minnesota, that's when we were like officially management. So we would do check-in, front desk work. And we would also, on top of that, clean the rooms just to save a bit money from hiring a maid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I started experiencing it the most. When I turned 13, I had the responsibility of looking after the desk when my parents had to leave. And actually this past, over Thanksgiving break, I was working the front desk so my parents could go Black Friday shopping, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came in and they had me turn my computer around for the check-in system. And they started talking very slowly at me, thinking I wasn't understanding their English. And they had me turn everything around and just show them everything I was doing. And when it came time to take the payment, I asked for a credit card. And he wasn't willing to give it to me. He wanted to, and the system we had, you have to enter the number instead of swipe. And he wanted to do that all by himself. And yeah, it was,
wow,
an experience.
Yeah, yeah. And just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pretty recently.
So we're going from after 9/11 to, and I said, during that time. So
mm-hmm.
thank you for bringing it. It's still
pretty relevant. Yeah,
yeah, it's still, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and maybe less associated about 9/11 and
mm-hmm.
more generalized fear and hatred and oppression of brown and black folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you handle that, Neil? That's a,
I mean, so
I would be, sorry, I would be tempted to say perhaps you want to find a hotel elsewhere, but
yeah, so for us, so the biggest thing about me that I think is really cool is due to growing up in all these different communities, my parents were like trying to raise a child in America for the first time, and they had no idea what would happen. So thoughts on like politics, religion, things like that, we did not talk about. We were not allowed to talk about. So we were just taught to shut up and do what we have to do. And that, unfortunately, I do still have that mindset sometimes. Like in that situation, it was just shut up, do what I have to do. This is like getting that money for the family in this sense was more important than defending myself. So when I came to college, that's what I was used to. But that's when I found Student Association. And honestly, that's where I found my mentor, Mike, and they were the ones to teach me that I don't have to be like that. And that's when I started like letting my voice be heard loud and proud. But there are sometimes like that when I am back home, I just kind of crawl back into that shell where it's like, it's not worth it sometimes.
Sure. Yeah. Or even it sounds like making could be a conscious decision to, in this case, the value of the income for my family is more important than.
Yeah.
So you now having more avenues or ways to respond, it sounds like that's a powerful story. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. So, and we have another semester break coming up. So I imagine you'll go home and continue to help out.
Yeah, it's good to help out, especially like, so I'm the oldest child. So
okay.
They're trying to obviously they raised me in America. Now they're trying to raise a college student, and it's a mess. So going back home is nice to just show them that I'm not completely like out of our culture. Like I'm still the kid you raised, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So and you've mentioned, you know, culturally and used that word, and I'm wondering if just for me and for those listening, if you could talk more about what some of those cultural, what is important culturally or in your family?
Yeah, so the biggest thing or a couple of big things is we always treat our elders with respect. And I see that a lot here and like people of power. Like, so I talked about Mike earlier. For me, since he got the Board of Regents position, just because of how I grew up, it's weird for me to call him Mike now. Like I should be calling him Regent Kenyanya Chancellor Black. Like I would never call him by his first name. I would always say Chancellor Black, Dr. Irwin.
Yeah.
I would always use professional titles. And then, yeah, treating your elders with respect is a big thing. And then knowing when to speak and knowing when not to, that's been instilled in us quite a bit. And then obviously with culture, there's food. And coming here was hard because there's not that Indian food scene. What I do a lot is when I go home, my mom and me cook together, freeze a whole bunch of meals that I could bring up. So I'm trying not to lose that part of the culture. But India being so big, there's also so many different languages. And 3 years here, I've only found one person who speaks the same language as me. But then we're from different parts of the same state, so the dialect is still a little different.
Okay.
So it's obviously language is a really big thing too.
And what is that language?
So we speak Gujarati. That's our native tongue.
Okay. So did your parents speak that growing up then? Like, so you were raised in a bilingual.
Yeah, so I learned Gujarati and English hand in hand together.
Yeah, just supposedly a good way to learn language right away. Yeah. Huh. So how about faith, religious, spiritual?
Yeah, so we were raised in a Hindu family.
Okay.
I was actually talking about this with one of my supervisors over summer, and my sense of religion comes down when I'm in Duluth because I don't have the means to practice it. But when I'm home, my sense of religion is a lot higher. We pray every morning, every night, before every meal. We say a prayer. Here, since I don't have the means to pray every morning and night, I just do the prayers before my meals.
Okay.
And that's the only way I could really practice it. And then with holidays and things like that, it's I try to go back home in like a close to a timeline where we would be celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
Fall break was actually great because I got to celebrate Diwali and the new year at the same time while I was home. So that ended up being really ideal. But growing up in a Hindu family was different because that's not what we were surrounded by.
Right.
And then, especially when we were in Arkansas, there wasn't any temples or anything. But in Minnesota, when you go back down to the Twin Cities, there are a lot of temples and there are a lot of people that practice the same religion. And it's honestly a great way to meet people as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's a good example, too, of some of the things we talk about with, quote, inclusive campus climate, is getting people to understand some of the privilege and bias in our academic calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people are going home for, quote, the holidays.
Yeah.
But it's not everyone's holiday.
Yeah.
And so just that, just the prevalence of folks not having that purview. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you, like, lifting that up for us. These episodes won't be aired until probably spring, but for folks who are listening, it's finals week. It's December 11th. Yes, and so that's the context that we're talking about here. So, yeah. So, what else might you think is important to talk about on a show like this, where we get to go in depth a bit with campus climate, student association? You know, what feels important to you to mention?
I think one thing that I've been working on personally this year is, so we talked a little bit about racism, but mm-hmm. looking at what racism looks like on our campus, with the 125th anniversary coming up, I would love to see an event like that on campus pretty soon. That's just really interesting to me because it's no secret that our university is majority white.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'd be really interesting to talk to people and see what racism does look like on our campus, because sure, there may be acts that are super relevant and shows like, oh, that was super racist, but there is the subtle things that people don't know or people don't talk about. And yeah, on our campus, I think that'd be something really interesting to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I would like to say I would know what it looks like, but I don't.
Yeah.
But we all know it's there. It's inevitable. So,
mm-hmm. So what might that, if we imagine what that might be or look like,
mm-hmm.
what might that look like? A series of interviews or panels or?
I think it'd be really cool to do a panel with like different students of colors from different like decades.
Mm.
So starting from Dr. Harry Oden, who was the first African-American male to attend the campus,
mm-hmm.
starting from when he got here to a different student, maybe every day, or I guess alumni now, from every decade.
Yeah.
And just doing a panel, letting us hearing their stories, and then also us being able to ask questions.
Yeah.
I think that would be really cool.
That would be really cool. And I'm thinking the annual summit on equity, diversity, inclusion, and multiculturalism, which now the Commission on Ethnicity and Race, I'm not sure what SERE, I'm not sure what the other E is, but that might be an opportunity to host something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should put our heads together and
That'd
see
be awesome.
What we can come up with. Yeah, I like that idea a lot. Another kind of question that we like to ask everyone, you know, the theme of our campus climate campaign right now and that this podcast is under is called It's More Than That. And so you've certainly shared a lot with us that we wouldn't have known
mm-hmm.
to let us know that you are It's More Than That. But is there anything that rises to the top for you that you haven't already talked about, that what might be Neil Bakhta's It's More Than That story?
Well, I think with It's More Than That, the most strong statement is that everyone has a story. And I was lucky enough to share some of my story today. But there is more than that, more than what I have shared. Yeah, especially with, so one of the topics, and it's more than that, is addressing bullying. Mm-hmm. So for me, one thing that I saw when I, while I was growing up, especially in, I want to say it was in Mankato, I had this, my parents found this like $10 hoodie, like teal and black stripes, and it was one of our first winters in Minnesota, and obviously we grew up a little bit poor, so I would wear that sweatshirt every day as kind of my winter coat,
mm-hmm.
and I actually got made fun of it for it almost every day because it was just the one thing I wore. Like, you can count on me to wear that. Like, if you were to bet on something and have it be 100% guarantee, it's that Neil was going to wear that teal and black striped sweatshirt every day.
Yeah.
I think especially with when you're growing up, at no matter where you are, you have to acknowledge that there could be something else happening.
Mm-hmm.
When you see that student crying in the hallway after an exam, it's probably not just the exam. There's definitely something else going on. And I'm not saying it's our job to always acknowledge the person, but it is our job not to have those judgments, mm-hmm. and not to judge people, because there's more to every story.
Yeah, yeah. So you were bullied,
mm-hmm.
and that sweatshirt was part of the impetus for that.
Yeah. And I honestly, I would say I didn't feel comfortable in school until my senior year of high school, when I just started having the mindset that it's not what other people think of me that matters. It's me doing this for my family. Like, my parents sacrificed so much for me. Going to college is because of how much my parents sacrificed for me. It's not what anyone else thinks of me.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wearing sweatpants and a hoodie, but as long as I'm doing what I have to succeed and make my parents proud and get us out of the life we're essentially living right now,
mm-hmm.
that's all that matters. And there's more to every story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does some of that fuel your passion and your work now with the mental health campaign and
mm-hmm.
and just your work in student association? Like, you really...
Yeah. So another negative thing on our culture is we don't talk about mental health.
Yeah.
So in my family, since it was just part of our culture, I was like, oh yeah, we're never going to see it. But it started affecting my mom in my junior year of high school when she was diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And that's when a lot of this started. It's like, okay. I have the blessing of growing up in two different cultures, that Indian culture and the American culture. So taking what I've learned from the American culture and bringing it home, taking what I've learned in my Indian culture and bringing it to my outside life.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I really started addressing mental health as an issue. And knowing that my culture doesn't talk about it, I want to see those changes. I want to help pursue some of those changes. And that's one of the big things that pushes me in the mental health campaign and just speaking on mental health in general,
mm-hmm.
and just realizing its importance.
Mm-hmm. So there's already that stigma of mental health in general that you spoke of earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sounds like in the Indian culture, there's an added layer of we don't talk about it. And do we acknowledge it?
We don't, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay.
With this generation that's been growing up in the American culture, though, it is becoming more relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard for our parents to understand it, but at the end of the day, they care about us and they are trying to make the efforts. For me, it's the other way around, where we realized it in my mom first,
mm-hmm.
and we were acknowledging it with my mom, and before I realized that, okay, I'm struggling with it too. And now it's because they do care about us, they do love us, they are trying to acknowledge it and like learn more and understand.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're in a shift in our culture right now where we are starting to understand mental health, but that's me speaking from the perspective as growing up in America. Like, I honestly, if I talk to my cousins who are still in India, it would probably be the same way it's mm-hmm. been for years.
Yeah, yeah. Really straddling two worlds and two cultures. Mm-hmm. And so how's your mom doing, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so there's always the occasional, like, just down days, mm-hmm. but with her son coming home for a month now, that should help out. And I mean, just getting to be there for her. And then my sister is obviously at home, so she's a junior in high school, so a lot of it does fall on her shoulders right now, because mm-hmm. my dad works two jobs. My grandparents, like, they live with us, but trying to make your grandparents understand this is a lot more difficult than trying to make your parents understand mental health. So right now, a lot of it does fall on my sister, but we do have family that live nearby, so yeah, she's at a really good place right now. Mm-hmm. It's probably the best place she's been at for a couple of years now.
Okay. So I don't know if you know, I used to teach, when I was faculty, it was in the Department of Psychology. So one of the courses that I love teaching was for graduate students to become counselors and therapists and on being a culturally responsive practitioner. And so how to just what you're talking about, like, I hope that your mom has found resources that can acknowledge and work within her culture and ways of being, because I think otherwise it's harder.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
I think where she stopped going to a counselor for a while, but over Thanksgiving me and my cousins talked to her, and she's starting to go to a counselor again, which has been really good, because, mm-hmm. like I was talking about earlier, you don't always need a solution. Sometimes you just need to talk about it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just having someone to talk to is always great, mm-hmm. especially if they're a trained professional.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
I just want to say thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, thank you It's just been very heartwarming to, like you said, the importance of getting to know people's stories. And mm-hmm. I see all sorts of layers of you that I didn't know before, which for me creates a relational trust that goes into those meetings with us.
Yeah.
So, so thanks for that. I think that's a big part of the gift, as you mentioned, of sharing our stories with each other. So speaking of gifts, I eggs were the thing in the previous podcast.
Oh.
Because we have eggs and chickens, but they don't lay in the winter. So I dug into my pantry and brought you another homemade gift, which is maple syrup. So I don't know if that fits in with any of your Indian cuisine, but perhaps you can make pancakes or something sometime when you're home.
Yeah, I might have to do pancakes. Yeah, I don't think it'll fit with that Indian food too well.
Probably wouldn't fit with Indian food. No. So yeah, that's something we make. And if you know anything about the process, we call it liquid gold, because it takes quite a bit to get that from tapping the trees to...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for this.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy that. Well, thank you for sharing of yourself and your family. You can listen to more episodes of UMD's It's More Than That podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. Visit d.umn.edu/campusclimate to find additional information on our episodes and more about what the University of Minnesota Duluth is doing to build a better, more welcoming campus community for all. And you can sign our pledge and work with us on your own personal journey.